Blog Talk Radio.
Show number 61. This is January 6, 2014. I am your host, Tom Riddell, and hopefully we're going to have a show tonight. We've got some technical difficulties here, and I hope you can all hear me. This, of course, is the show where we showcase new authors, and I am your host, Tom Riddell, and shortly, hopefully she'll be showing up tonight, is my co-host, Robin Eduardo. Brief introduction to today's show. We will be bringing on Terrence King, the author of The Silent Partner, here in about quarter after the hour here on the Writer's Lounge. If you want to find us, you can find us over at the Writer's Lounge blog, over at tomriddell.com/blog. And over there, you can read all the reviews and listen to the shows from the Blog Talk Radio player located in the upper left-hand corner of the page. Once again, and something new here on the show, we are sponsoring, we have a sponsor, I should say, from the publishing world, from the Writer's Lounge that's sponsoring our show, is Curiosity Quills. And you can go over to curiosityquills.com and listen to, or just kind of plug that site in and go ahead and take a look and see what they have over there for all of you writers and readers, of course, over there that are interested in the Writer's Lounge. You can also find us on Facebook. We're over there, and please like us. We're also on Twitter. Please follow us. You can also follow us on or contact us at twl@yahoo.com. And so a little bit frailed here because we had some difficulties, and I'm not even sure if this is even going out over the air, but hopefully it is. And right now I would like to promote Magic Pen Web Design. It has offered its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. And if you want to go over to the site over at magicpenwebdesign.com, go over there and fill out the free estimate form and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And it doesn't look like I'm going to be going without a co-host tonight. I'm not sure what's going on here after some technical difficulties on Robin's end, but hopefully she'll be showing up soon. We do have, I believe, our author in the queue here, and we'll be bringing him on shortly. That, once again, is Terrence King, the Silent Partner, the author of The Silent Partner. And, okay, where are we here? I'm really apologizing for stumbling around here because I was really working hard to get the show on the air. I had some trouble with my microphone, and I am doing this through the phone, and I'm really hoping that it's going to work. Let's see. TWL book promotion. You can go over to the Facebook page and see what that's all about. And we've had several book promotions over the course of the last several months, and go ahead and take a look on over there and see if you'd like to promote your book on the Writer's Lounge. And, of course, getting to that, we would like to announce the promotion of some of these books, these book promotions. And the first one would be Christmas Terror Tales, Stories to Enjoy from October through December by Kevin Folliard. Book description is Christmas Caracals, Stories to Enjoy from October through December, 16 gripping tales inspired by classical horror and urban legends, twist holiday themes into chilling cautionary tales. So once again, go ahead and look up Christmas Territory. I can never say that right. And I hope Kevin forgives me. Christmas Caracals. And go ahead and plug it into a search engine, and you'll find the book by Kevin Folliard. Next up on our book promotion tour, The Storms of Deliverance by Larry Higdon. A man called Bad News Johnson seeks atonement for heavy drinking and violence. In his quest to reunite with his ex-wife and her daughter, he encounters possible time travel, possible ghosts, and storms, both real and metaphorical. Now, Larry Higdon has, in addition to his writing, worked as an elementary school counselor. He's a registered play therapist and a lawyer. This is his first novel. His second novel, School from Hell, should be available soon. And that's, once again, Storms of Deliverance by Larry Higdon. Also coming up here is Brian Anderson. I'm going to play his ad now, and we'll be listening to Brian, and we'll be right back. Hopefully I can work out some of the bugs here.
Hi, this is Brian D. Anderson, author of The Goblin Chronicles, and I have an exciting opportunity for fans of the series. From now until New Year's Eve, I'll be accepting submissions for fan fiction short stories based on The Goblin Chronicles. They need to be between 1,000 and 25,000 words and be in some way about The Goblin Chronicles' world or characters. Now that you know the rules, let's make with the excitement. Third prize is a signed copy of all four Goblin Chronicles books. Second prize, your short story will be professionally edited and published on Amazon.com. The grand prize? Your short story will be edited and published, but you also win a contract to have a novel written by you and published under the GMTA label. That's right. If you win, you become a published author. Contract will include editing, proofing, and cover art. And if you haven't written your novel yet, don't worry. The contract's open-ended, so it will be there when you're ready. All submissions should be sent by midnight, January 1st, 2014, to thegoblinchronicles@gmail.com, and the winner will be announced February 3rd right here on this show. Good luck, and I'm looking forward to reading your stories.
Okay, and that was once again Brian Anderson, one of our favorite authors. Of course, they're all favorite here on the Writer's Lounge, and Brian is doing very well, and talk to him on occasion, and hopefully you'll get into that contest and see if you can win something there. So also, we'd like to talk to you about, I was going to bring in my co-host, but not here. So I will just say here that here in Minnesota right now, we're experiencing very, very cold conditions. It's about, I think, probably about minus 15 degrees right now with a wind chill, probably somewhere around minus 36 to minus 40. So it's very cold. It's a great time to sit down and read, and that's something I've been doing a lot of in the last couple of days. One of the books that I've been reading that I haven't had a chance really to get out there and read regular authors, or the best-selling authors, I should say, would be Stephen King, and the name of that book is Dr. Sleep. It's a sort of a sequel to The Shining, and everybody remembers that book and that movie. And it's very good. So if you get a chance, get out there to your favorite bookseller and pick up Dr. Sleep. It's very good. I'm only into maybe the first 10 pages of the book, and it's going very well. And I think it's another classic. So I just want to put in a plug there for Stephen King. I would love to get him on the Writer's Lounge. I don't think that's going to happen. But anyway, that's probably something that would be fun to do, especially in the cold of winter here, especially in Minnesota where, like I said, it's brutally cold out there. Okay, I'm really struggling here because I usually have everything written down and I usually have time to sit down here and go through my notes to, kind of get everything in order here for the show. So I do once again apologize for the little bit of disorder here, but the disorder will disappear here in a few minutes when we bring on Terrence King, who wrote The Silent Partner. It's an interesting story. I think you'll find about an angel and God, and it's going to be fun talking to Terrence once he comes on the line here. Other things that are going on here on the Writer's Lounge, as I said, that we now have the sponsor here, which is the publisher, the Curiosity Quills, and we will be bringing on a new sponsor hopefully every month. So that's something that if you are a publisher out there, that I would hope that you would get involved and visit us over at the Writer's Lounge and get in line to be a sponsor on the show. I know that we have a lot of writers out there who have questions regarding getting their works published, and this is a great opportunity to check out the many publishers that are out there and work to try and get them to help you publish your book, because that can be a very daunting task, especially these days with so many publishers out there. So if you are a publisher, go ahead and, as I said, go over there and take a look. And send me an email if you'd like to do that at twl11@yahoo.com. And go ahead and, you know, have any questions at all, I'd be glad to answer them and hopefully be able to answer them for you here at the Writer's Lounge. So anyway, let's get back to the caller information here. If you'd like to give us a call, it's 626-213-5613 or toll free at 877-878-1436. So once again, I am your host, Tom Riedel. I am going without a co-host tonight, and shortly here, probably sooner than we normally do, I will be bringing on Terrence King, and that'll be fun. And as of right now, though, what I'm going to do is I'm going to find a little bit of humor with Harrison Keeler, and we'll play a couple of his clips about writing and getting out to write and humor writing, both from him. Then we'll be back and we'll start our interview with Terrence.
My advice to writers is very simple. It is to get out. Get out more. Don't sit in the house. Go for long walks. Good for you. Writing is an obsessive activity, and it's too easy to get too tied to what you're doing when your deadline is the most serious. That's the most important time to get out of the house and go for a walk, to walk for 2 or 3 miles every day, rapidly if necessary, but to get out and to look at the world. Writing is not narcissism. Writing is about the world that we live in, and when writing loses touch with the beautiful surface of the world, it loses its way. So much writing is about the alienation of a superior intelligence, that is the writer's. That's the writing to avoid. You always want to be in touch with how things look and what people say and what they call their dogs. You always want to be there. Irma Bombeck's strength as a writer was that she knew the names of things. She knew what was in people's homes. She called things by their right name. She got out among people.
Have you ever had a time where you had to write, you know, keep up the humor writing when you were in a time in your life where life really wasn't all that funny and it was really hard to find the humor?
Oh, it's better then. It's much better. If you're really depressed, you can be much funnier. If you're in a good mood, it's very hard. I mean, and what would be the motivation for writing if you're in a good mood? Why would you want to do it?
I'm not talking so much about mood. I'm talking more about circumstance, like when something really bad is happening.
Things bad happen all the time. When you get to be my age.
There you go. That's Garrison Keeler, a little bit of writing humor there, and a little bit of advice about you writers that want to get out there and do some writing. And I'm not sure, but before we bring on Terrence, I think we have Robin here. I can never remember her number. I will, hopefully this is her, but let me bring on this person here. Hopefully it is Robin. Welcome to the Writer's Lounge. Is this Robin? Hello? Okay, I guess that isn't. And we will go right now to the main event here, and that would be Terrence King. And once again, please bear with me while I talk about The Silent Partner, which was written by Terrence King and published by Trafford Publishing in 2012. You may purchase it at Amazon.com/Kindle. A homery, misbehaving angel with a tenacious attitude and a mouth that would make Gabriel cringe is sent back to Earth to help a struggling columnist publish a book that will save the world, or so God says. God has removed Homer from 900 years of isolation for her bad behavior and given her his mission of extreme importance so that she may redeem herself. But Homer, even after being in isolation for 900 years, is still distrusting of God, and she isn't afraid to let him know it. Yet it's her job to find a way to get the book published, but there is one major obstacle. She can't use her angelic powers to get it done. She has to play God's rule of free will, which exists in a world of humans who are seen by her as being violent, self-centered brats. Even so, the fate of the world is at stake, and Homer is the one who has to save it, and she has very little time to do it. I enjoyed reading this book. The humor value is good, as the interactions between Homer and God gave me more than a few chuckles. But it also brings back all of those age-old questions of why does a loving, caring God act the way he does? Even Homer, a God-sent angel on a mission, has to endure living on the streets and sleeps at night in a cardboard box. This being the author's first novel, I found it to be easy to read, and the characters were likable and interesting. The only thing that kept the star rating hovering between a 3 and a 4 was the slowness in developing the plot between a few of the main characters. I really enjoyed Homer in a lot, and I look forward to the story to swing back to her and her earthly adventures. The book gets better as you turn the pages, and it especially delivered its best near the end. And with that, I would like to bring on our guest author, and that would be Terrence King. And Terrence, would you rather me call you Terry or Terrence? What works for you?
You can call me either. They're both non-profane, so I love both.
Okay. All right, so we will call you, let's see, let's go with Terry. I kind of like Terry.
Yeah, that's what most of my friends call me.
Okay, good. And once again, Terry, I do apologize. I had a little bit of a glitch here at the beginning. I hope you can hear
hey,
me.
No worries.
I can hear you fine. A little bit of a stumble.
Not a problem.
Here, but, we're professionals here at the Writer's Lounge, and we'll recover very nicely as long as the drugs are working. Anyway, Terry, getting back to, I know you're a very busy guy, and we'll touch on more of what you do with your career and other things, but could you read an excerpt from your book?
Sure. I'll read a good little page and a half here.
Okay.
There was no way her father hadn't known what was going on. He'd always picked up on the unspoken communications between her and her mother. He might have seemed oblivious, but he'd been far from that. How awful it must have been for him to know that he wasn't enough for her mother. Jamie felt a wave of nausea. Tom was now doing what her mother had done. He was fixated on Terry because he was looking for whatever it was that Jamie wasn't providing him. Certainly, Jamie hadn't plopped their relationship in the microwave. Sitting silently, Jamie pushed aside thoughts of Tom and considered everything her mother had just revealed. She wasn't at all upset about her mother's adulterous escapade. After all, her mother's affair took place decades ago. She wasn't about to go wallowing in her childhood pain again. The constant fighting at home before the divorce, moving from place to place after it, eating top ramen when there was little money for food or anything else, she had blocked out that part of her life. She had more immediate concerns now, like her job and Tom. She thought about him, obsessing over his ex. If they were really broken up, nothing was stopping him now. Maybe he'd already set up a rendezvous with his lost love. She felt sick. As if she sensed Jamie's thoughts, her mother straightened up, switched gears, and focused on her next target. Jamie, I'm worried about you. I'm not a fan of this Tom boy or Tom man, if that's what you want me to call him. Such a weird one. I've never really liked writers anyway. Always observing the world, making judgments on people and things, all questionable if you ask me. Writers write about the world. That doesn't mean they know the world they live in. If we're not together, you have nothing to worry about, okay? She noticed the kitchen clock. She had to go. Throw up. Her mother noticed the ring on Jamie's finger. You kept the ring? Good for you. It's not like that. Her stomach was churning. You hate me now, don't you? Of course not, Jamie said, with obligation to her mother's manipulation, but meaning it. It's a lot to hit me with this morning. She quickly got up and ran to the bathroom and slammed the door. Her mother followed her and spoke to her through the bathroom door, continuing as if she'd expected such a reaction from her daughter. I know it's not my cooking. She picked at a stray cuticle. Clarity is better than blissful ignorance. I should have told you this long ago, Jamie. Sorry I didn't. Jamie knew her mother was pouting. It's okay, Mom. If she wasn't kneeling over the toilet, she would have felt like their roles were reversed. It's water near the bridge. She hurled. What I need to do, her mother realized, is get a better look at Pete's buttocks. Jamie hurled again. I only felt them briefly last night, her mother continued. I needed more light for a good study anyways. Her mother was a recent casual student of rumpology, the study of the lines, crevices, and folds of a person's buttocks. Or as Jamie thought of it, palm reading of the ass. Jamie wasn't up to hearing the differences in character again between someone with an apple-shaped rump versus a pear-shaped one. Her mother had guessed that her daughter's naturally muscular bubble butt, which he hadn't seen bare since Jamie was 7 years old, charismatic, confident, dynamic, and creative. Not a conversation she wanted to prolong any morning, but especially not when she was late.
Very good.
Thank you.
Terry, and I was just wondering about your story here and how long it took you to write that story.
5 years.
Wow.
I started 2 years in, and I had to rewrite the whole thing. I went through a lot getting started. I started writing this as a screenplay, and it sat on the shelf for a little while. And I wrote the book like a movie, incidentally. However, when I started digging into it and writing it, I really thought I knew what I was doing. But after submitting it to an editor and getting my notes back and talking to one of my writer pals, I realized that I didn't know what I was doing, and I had to go learn the rules a little more so that I could mold them, break them, make them my own, write the story well, and appeal to audiences. So I had to rewrite it, and that was the next 3 years.
Well, yeah, so much for first draft. Everybody thinks, well, we're going to sit down and write a story, and then it'll be out there. But no, the hard part is the rewrite and the editing, of course, and then – of course, you got to get busy with doing the book promotions and all that other stuff that comes along with it. But I was wondering, Terry, what prompted you to write a story about God and his questionable actions and a misbehaving female angel?
Well, God is one of those unanswerable questions for many. Who he is, or some people think she is, you know, Jesus was white, black, who knows? Honestly, none of that touches the book because it's not a religious book at all. It touches a bit on spirituality, but I wrote it specifically, which is part of the reason why it took so long to write, because I wanted what people brought to the table with any of their prejudices, etc., that would enhance the storytelling of the novel. Not, I didn't want to do anything preachy. I don't care where people stand one way or the other, whether they're religious or not, whether they believe in God or not. In fact, there's a strong agnostic character in the book for good reason. I wanted to tell a story that I thought meant something, and I had I had to go through a number of personal challenges in my own life. I got divorced. I had an uncle who got shot and murdered. And due to those things, I was dealing with my own issues of faith, and love and loss and God and everything. And so it's the reason why I picked up the script, and I thought it'd be kind of cleansing to flesh it out. It was much harder than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's quite the endeavor there to do what you did. And are you thinking about making it into a screenplay?
If there was interest in it, yes. You know, I'm not out there pitching Hollywood, but if I had the opportunity to be in the room with somebody who said, hey, you know, I saw that you won a couple book awards for this thing. It looks very interesting to me. It looks very visual. I'd love to consider putting it in a movie. Can you write a script? I would absolutely do that. But in the meantime, I've started on writing a new novel, and I'm in the developmental process of that. But, God, there'd be nothing greater than turning The Silent Partner into a movie.
Sure, that would be great. I would love to see that happen. And I really find that, talking about character development here, it can be very difficult at times, but sometimes naming a character can instantly add personality and interest. And what I found very interesting was immediately knowing that the female angel in your story was named Homer. And that immediately perked me up thinking, oh, I got to read this. This really sounds good. So is this what you were thinking when you named her Homer?
Well, first of all, I started writing Homer as a male character. Started out as male, named Homer, sort of modeled after, the Odyssey. But I made the character female because I thought she was more interesting. I think female characters are more interesting. They're more interesting to write,
How far into the story did you go before you made that switch?
I was about 2 years in, 2.5.
As far as writing as far as words, the word count and all that, how long did it take?
Oh, boy. That's hard to see exactly when I did it. I had complete drafts, but word count, I cut out 40,000 words and added 9 scenes by the time I finished it. So I ended up enriching the fabric of the story, but editing a lot of exposition and cut a number of things down to get the word count down. But I was a couple years in and had complete drafts and changed Homer. When Homer became female, I was able to dig into intuition. In my mind, more realistically, and it made the character... It added a depth of feel to the character because she can do. There's more reasons for her to do things as a female in the story. You know, we have a lot of cultural prejudices against a number of things. You know, whether it's people who lead dog fighting or people who jump out of airplanes. We have prejudices about those in our culture. So what we bring to the table very much adds to the layering of the characters, and making her female, boy, I just thought it enriched it so much. And I'm stoked to get some of the reviews I've gotten, and yours too. Thank you for the positive words, Tom.
Well, you're very welcome. And I also, in touching on that, as you're talking about culture, she's also female, and she's also, I believe, African-American. Is that correct?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, that adds, and also she's also homeless. Well, I mean, she's been put back on the earth, and she ends up living in a cardboard box, which I find very interesting, especially now that we're probably, let's see, right now we're minus 15 degrees here in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
With
the wind chill at around 36 below zero or even greater, I would think that Homer would really have a challenge here, and she would not be very happy with God for putting her in the ice box of Minnesota right now. So, all those elements that you talked about that you brought into the story, you know, the female, the African-American, the idea that she was homeless, all really adds to the story and makes it very interesting. What I'm wondering, and you touched on some of it here, but what was the most difficult process in writing The Silent Partner?
The most difficult. Well, I think the most difficult was realizing that a couple years that I'd poured into it, I not only had an incomplete product, but I had a substandard one. And I needed to overhaul the whole thing, Not, you know, hey, we need to get a handle on your pros. It was seriously the whole thing. Everything from the story development to where I had exposition to my level of action, you know, the showing versus telling, which, you know, for every writer, oh, boy, this is something, you know. You do this, and some readers think that you're showing too much. You do this, some readers think you're basically writing a screenplay because you're just showing the action. Or they don't pick up on things, you know, that you need to reference later on in the story. It's an interesting dichotomy. And I love the challenge of writing a well-thought-out, well-orchestrated, well-executed story. It's the best part about writing. And I enjoyed the process of writing. I did not enjoy having to overhaul the whole thing after 2 years. That was hard for me to swallow. It took me a little while to get my head around it.
What about the research involved? I imagine a lot of it probably comes from your imagination, but did you do any sort of research to bring this book together?
Sure. I mean, I don't work in a publication. I don't write for a magazine. You know, by day I sell advertising for some radio stations. So I happen to know quite a few things when it comes to working in media and working radio stations. And I have friends on the advertising agency angle, so I can write about that. Because you got to write about what you know. But I had to dig a little bit deeper, do a little bit of research. I didn't know much about the Sadducees, and I needed to read up on whether it was on how IPOs are done or, you know, how the heck the orchestrations work inside a publication. I had to look into all that.
How about researching the man himself? God, did you do any of that?
You know, fortunately, I did some review. I didn't have to do too much initial teaching, because creating a work of fiction is about taking what you know and creating something that you hope other people enjoy. And, you know, God is whoever you want him to be. Some people want to make him
exactly.
But him or her, but ultimately, you know, the God I created was a character who, you know, well, he had something to prove, and he wasn't going to make things at all easy for Homer. He was going to make this very, very challenging. And, you know, I am no, you know, a racial pundit out there beating my voice to the world that black people have it hard, or white people have it hard, or, you know, Democrats have it harder, or, you know, Republicans are bastards. I don't have opinions about that in this book. Rather, what opinions do the readers have? Because they will bring their own prejudices to this, and that is what to me was the fun in creating the fabric and the themes in this book. Because ultimately, Tom, when you have all these character arcs, and all of their worlds are collapsing, and they have to find that thing within themselves. They have to find it and determine if they are going to overcome their obstacle or not. And some are drawn closer to this, and some are drawn farther from that, and they have to find it. That is something that everybody can relate to, including the agnostic character of the book.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of those struggles and a lot of those things that actually come to a reader, it's like a paintbrush. As you're reading a story, everything gets painted in to the imagination. It's almost like kind of a side note here, but listening to the radio when you're watching or listening to a baseball game, you can sort of paint in the picture of what's happening on the baseball field. Sort of the same thing probably with works of fiction like yours. You know, you're picturing a person. You don't know exactly what they look like, but you have a sort of an idea of what they look like, and all of that comes into the story. And if you're a good author, you're able to put the paintbrush in the reader's hand. Would you agree with that?
I not only agree with it, I agree with it vehemently. And it's the greatest part about reading and writing on both sides of it. You know, I mean, I've written only one book. I've read many, many more. And I love that part. I love learning from other writers. I love learning about the tools they use and the tactics, techniques they use to elevate drama and to bring about a character to life. It's one of the greatest gifts that we're given. It is what separates. I mean, otherwise, it's work, friends, loved ones, which are all very important things. But to me, art, characters, these things are the things that just add so much flavor and spice to the universe. And this is, you know, personally for myself, I don't know what I would do without movies and books, seriously. You know, I actually created a book trailer for this, a cinematic book trailer for The Silent Partner.
Yes, I did see that, and it's very well done. Very well done.
Thank you. Crew, it took us 10 months to make it, and we shot it like a movie. Like, when you go to the movies and you sit there and you watch for a three-minute cinematic movie trailer before you can finally watch the movie you paid $10 to see, and then, you know, the trailer runs, and you look over to the person you came to the movie with, and you go, skip that one. That's what I did. That's what I didn't want to have happen after somebody saw the Silent Partner trailer. I wanted them to go, wow, this looks interesting. This looks intriguing. I didn't want to give away the whole story. I didn't want to give away all the funny lines. I didn't want to give away all the good parts. But I wanted to give just enough for people to go, I don't know what this is about. This looks interesting. Let's look into this. And, you know, give people an idea of the characters. And it keeps coming back to me that outside of some of the obvious characters in the trailer, when they see the trailer, they read the book, they see the trailer again, they enjoy the hell out of the trailer once they read the book, because now they know who everybody is.
Yep. Terry, did you act in that little video segment at all?
I did, not because I'm the best actor in the world, but because it was one less actor I needed to hire, and I knew I would be there on the set.
Yeah.
I've done some acting and stuff. I love doing it, and I love the writing, but ultimately it was one less actor I needed to recruit. So, yeah, I played Tom, the character of Tom in the trailer.
Sure, okay. Yeah, I do remember that, and very good. And getting back to the writing part, of, obviously this is what we're doing here, is the writing and the reading. But getting back to the writing of the book, where, and we asked all of our authors to send the Writer's Lounge, but where do you go and how do you get in the mood to write?
You know, I love to write in coffee shops with my earphones on with some hot Java. And then get another one, and then get another one. It's really hard at night, by the way, doing this and waking up in the morning early. Because then I get home, the coffee shop closes, it's 11:30. I'm like, oh, my God, I get home. I don't want to go to sleep quite yet. And I worked all day. I wrote all night. And now, oh, my God, I'm going to go to sleep. I want to watch, you know, Bob's Burgers or something ridiculous on TV. And it's hard to do that sometimes, so I can do it a few days a week and put a few days in on the weekend. I try to write at home. I don't know how people do it, but some people love to do it, or they can't leave, or they only have 45 minutes between this with kids or whatever, and this is how they fit into writing, and I totally get it. But I too, have written at home, but I love to do it in the coffee shop. I just think that I'm not going to be distracted by, oh, I need to empty out the dishwasher, some laundry to do, I need to clean the floors, oh, I'll just walk over there, get something to eat, and then I just get so distracted at home, and I don't go to the shop.
And then the other thing I was just thinking about, the fabric of actually sitting down in the coffee shop as opposed to sitting down like I do here in my office if I do any kind of writing. Because I don't have the distraction. Well, you talk about distraction. I don't have the distraction of people being around me. But I'm wondering, as you're sitting there writing in a coffee shop, when you look up and you see all the characters and all the people around you, does that at all inspire, or did it inspire any part of your book?
Say what? Well, it does inspire me, but I'm not concerned about the people walking in and around. Maybe I just feel like I'm also less isolated because, you know, writing is solitude. Writing is solitude. On my website, I have this little clip where I met Sly Stallone on a red carpet, and I told him I started to write because of him, and he goes, well, you know, it's hard, you know. It's hard, you know, but...
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you that it's hard because it requires you to shut down the world. But for me, Tom, it's a process. Like, I walk to the coffee shop, I'm listening to the music, you know, in my earphones, I'm inspired, I get to walk to this place comfortably with my backpack, with my laptop, and I get to go write. And then when I'm done, and it's late at night, because I live down here, downtown San Diego, and I walk home, you know, I walk past the homeless, but I also walk past the big skyscrapers, and the lights are on. And I know people have been watching TV, or they've been drinking, or they've been, you know, doing nothing, which all of those are great, and I do those things too. But that night, I wrote, and as I walk home listening to tunes that I was listening to that were inspiring me while I was writing, I get to know that I've been working on my dream tonight. I got to work on my dream tonight. My passion, my love of this, and that inspires me. And that, so it's for me, it's a whole process. It's not just the writing itself. It's the whole thing. You know, like some guys love to shave, and then they got to have the brush and the foam and the right razor and the whole thing. Like there are people who shave like that.
Yep.
And there's others of us who it's not a big deal. They just go. They shave in the shower. They don't shave at all, which is also me sometimes. And it, because it's not a process. But for those of us where the writing is a process, it's not even just the writing. It's everything leading up to and following it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Terry, when you go through all that process, as you just explained, and your work is completed, when that last word is written, who was and who is the first person to read your book? How do you decide on who it will be? Obviously, you must have somebody that you entrust with your story to read through it.
You know what? I was so self-confident, in error from the beginning, that I was showing friends of, you know, whether it was a girlfriend or friends, pieces of it along the way. And before an editor ever saw it, you know, my friends were like, oh, this is awesome. Seriously, either A, I need new friends, which is not true. I love my friends. But seriously, the raking over the coals I got from my editor taught me a lot. But there were small little things that my friends said, like, no, I thought maybe there's a little too much description here, something the editor never caught. So everybody gave me something. Like, literally, there were best friends of mine. There were, you know, girlfriends, a girlfriend. I mean, you know, I had a few girlfriends over the five-year period, you know.
Okay.
In fact, I got divorced, you know, through the process. I bought a house. I got rid of a house. My job kept changing with my company through the 2008-2009 crash, you know, so everyone's stressed out about their jobs. I mean, there were a lot of things that went through this whole, I mean, a tumultuous life through the process, you know. But ultimately, dozens of saw it, and if you look at the acknowledgments at the end of the book, I mean, I referenced them there because ultimately. they helped me win those book awards and stuff. Like they helped.
If I remember, Terry, it was several pages long, and I was blown away by your generosity there in naming everybody. It seemed to read your book, something that a lot of us probably don't do. As authors, we mentioned a few, but you went through a quite a long list there, which I think was pretty cool to do that. Not only that, but those people to read their name in your book, I think is special too. So any of you writers out there that want to acknowledge. You could take a lot of advice from Terry here and maybe include those people in your book, because it's very important to the process, as Terry talks about here in writing his book, The Silent Partner. And we have, let's see here, about 14 minutes left. And if you'd like to give us a call at the Writer's Lounge, you can do that at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And Terry, now that you've written the book and you've got it out there and all your friends have given you their feedback, tell us about your approach to probably one of the hardest parts of being an author in today's world. Tell us about your approach to marketing and selling your book.
Well, you know, for me, it was a number of things. I mean, all of us have to rely on people we know and our own ambition in getting the word out about our book. There's no one right way to do it. You know, we read stories about people who, you know, they submit something and it gets accepted, first time author, the help gets made into a book, becomes a bestseller, becomes a movie, the movie wins Oscars. I mean, seriously, it kind of happens for so few people. And when I found out that there were more independent movies being made every year, you know, that go to video, that are widely distributed, then there are books that are taken by agents that do the same thing. I was thinking to myself, this is a tough put. I mean, I'm really not making it easy on myself. You're writing a book. It'd be easier to probably sell a screenplay in a lot less time.
Sure.
But ultimately, writing the book was about the book. And while I was writing the book, I started my blog. And then I built my website. And then I built my Twitter account. And I tied everything up to my LinkedIn. And then I built a Facebook page for the book, and I had people choose the book cover because I hired an artist to, you know, I couldn't make up my mind between two book covers. So I had Facebook fans choose the book cover, and I would go to Twitter and ask them to go to the Facebook page and help me choose the cover, and I'm going to be, you know, awarding copies of the book, and I'm going to be doing this
That's very interesting. I like that idea. They actually chose your book cover.
I had to do something because I couldn't make up my mind. It was awful, you know, hair pulling, you know. So, you know, utilizing Twitter for that and sharing novel lines.
Terry, how many book covers did you have to choose from?
Two.
Oh, okay.
Nobody wants to choose from 22. And I didn't want to commission an artist to commission that many.
Right.
So it was just two. It was two. Much different in concept, both equally stark. And one was my original one. The original concept was not the one that was chosen. So I let what everybody chose, you know. That was the one that was the one we used.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized
cool.
I said we, but that's the one that everybody chose.
Sure. Yeah,
so,
you're involving your fans. You're involving your readers, and that's important, I think, to actually selling your book again, because a lot of those good friends and family members will hopefully buy your book. And so that's very good. Really, really interested to hear how you did that.
It goes beyond, Tom, just, you know, writing the book, putting it out there and thinking the readers will come. That is evidently not clear. Even after winning the Eric Hoffer Awards, even after being on one of the local TV stations here, which, you know, they latched onto the book trailer part and thought that was cool, a new way of promoting a book. You know, and to have YouTube and the website and the blog and the Twitter account and the Facebook, everything kind of all, you know, trying to reach out there into the World Wide Web. That despite all that, you know, and the book on Amazon and some positive reviews and on Goodreads, you know, and on Smashwords, and seriously, going after all of these pockets of people, all of it All of it helps. All of it sells books. I will tell you something that actually a publicist shared with me, which, by the way, publicists are really, really great in assisting authors. I had a couple publicists. I got a number of interviews, including this one, from getting a publicist. So I will tell you that don't underestimate the value that a publicist can provide. My last publicist shared with me something. She said, do a book giveaway on Goodreads. Do a book giveaway there. And I said, oh, not a problem at all. And seriously, I'm not overstating this, but I think there were like 800 readers put The Silent Partner on their to-read list.
Mm.
So,
wow.
So there's something to be said for book giveaways, to be said for publicists, you know, getting us authors interviews. And there's a lot to be said for using the organic world of the people you know, whether it's some of them you love, some of them you like, some of them you tolerate. But at the end of the day, people do love to know authors. I mean, for whatever reason. I mean, they're not starstruck. So you walk in and people think you're Schwarzenegger. But honestly, they do appreciate and respect you for the work that you've done. And it's a great icebreaker anyway. But I definitely sell books because of all of those aforementioned reasons.
Very good. Terry, what's after The Silent Partner? I know you touched upon it at the beginning of the interview. You are writing another book?
Yes. I have a book that's in process. It's a little – it's a dystopian novel that is not quite science fiction, but it is feeding upon – themes that I think are hot in our not just American culture, but world culture. That's not fighting to live, with terrorism and stuff. It's not in that world, but for the civilized culture that is democratic and just trying to get by, honestly. I'm still in the developing stages. I don't want to share too much, but just let you know that for the next few months, I'm going to be building it out. So I won't get to actually write it for a little while.
Back to the coffee shop you go, right?
The coffee shop at all times possible, yes.
Very good. Very good. Terry, we're kind of winding up here. We've got a few minutes left, but where can our listeners reach you on the web?
Well, they can reach me on my website, terrenceJKing.com, T-E-R-R-E-N-C-E, the letter J, King.com. They can see my blog. There's a lot of tools there for writers. One of the things that I learned a lot during the process was that writers provide you invaluable tools. So I use my tools to try to help people. I take tools from other people, and I just pass them on. Because I think, God, for any of us out there who think, we have nobody there helping us. We don't have anybody, we don't come from nepotism, that can help us. We don't have somebody in the family that's gonna, hey, I'll pimp your book to the right people. So instead, we have to rely on ourselves. I learned a lot from writers and a few writers' conferences I went to. So I update my blog with writers' tools and how I got my first manuscript published. And as well as I have access to the book trailer, the Facebook, the Twitter. So writers can see some of the tactics I've used to whether it is acquire Twitter followers, acquire YouTube views, acquire book sales, et cetera.
Very good, Terry. And this is kind of the end of the interview, but it's been an excellent interview.
Thank you. Solo
here, and we had a little bit of a stumble at the start, but I think we recovered very
no
well.
No worries
and,
at all.
Really, really enjoyed The Silent Partner, and everybody out there in Writer's Lounge listening audience, please get on over to your search engine and type that in, and you'll find it a very nice, fun, interesting story by Terry Terry, again, hopefully we'll hear from you in the near future about anything
Thank
else
you.
That you're going to be writing here, and we'd love to have you back on at a later time.
Thank you, Tom. The book is less than $4 on Amazon for the Kindle. And I do want to thank you, sir, for what you do. Thank you for what you do for writers and readers. I think it's an incredible service that you do. And thanks so much for having me on.
And thank you so much. And we'll talk to you again, Terry.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too. Okay, there goes Terry. And now we end the show by going back to our book promotion. And our book promotion up now is The Bleeding by Maxie Stone. A book description, How Does a Maximum Security Inmate Commit a Murder on the Outside? The answer is more terrifying than you think. Mark my words, Derek Warren is smooth, charming, and a master manipulator, but is he a killer? I swear, if so, how is the former businessman committing murder from a maximum security prison cell? And what, if anything, does he have planned next? You'll never see it coming. Detective Stephen Bennett is sure he has the answers to these questions, but the path of dead bodies leads him to a truth far more disturbing than he suspected. You will bleed. Once again, that's The Bleeding by Maxie Stone. Next up, Without Bloodshed by Matthew Graybosch. Book description, All Who Threaten Me Die. These words made Morgan Stormarger's reputation as one of the Phoenix Society's deadliest IRD officers. He served with distinction as the Society's Avenger, hunting down anybody who dared kill an adversary in the line of duty. After a decade spent living by the sword, Morgan seeks to bid a farewell to arms and make a new life with his friends as a musician. Regardless of this faltering faith, the Phoenix Society has a final mission for Morgan after a dictator's accusations make him a liability to the organization. He must put everything aside, travel to Boston, and prove he is not the Society's assassin. He must put down Alexander Liebenthal's coup while taking him alive. And that is Without Bloodshed by Matthew Graybosch. Next up, Silver Earrings by Elgar. Book description, we all wish to find true love, but what happens when that love appears in the form of a person you were raised to believe was not for you, or even worse, your enemy? What do you do? Does love prevail, or will ingrained bias overtake emotion? You may be surprised how the story ends. This is a story told through the voices of its main characters. It is full of insight in their potential feelings as they journey down this forbidden path. Once again, Silver Earrings by Elgar. Last up here on the book promotion tour is Catch a Putz Collar by W. Exley. A book description, an ancient Egyptian artifact is driving Queen Victoria insane, and that's not the top of Kara Dagon's growing list of problems. Viscount Nathaniel Lyons is a man of numerous secrets, but there is one in particular that threatens his fledgling relationship with Kara. Stunned by Nate's revelation, and before she can absorb the ramification of his actions, he is arrested, charged with treason, and imprisoned in the Grim Tower of London. He stole something the Mad Queen wants and only has days to deliver before his date with the executioner. Only together can Kara and Nate figure out how to wrestle Hatshepsut's collar from around the Queen's neck before she plunges Britain into a world war. The search for answers sends Kara to the opulent Winter Palace of St. Petersburg in the frozen depths of Siberia, with every step shadowed by an enemy with his own dark plans. Hatshepsut's Collar by W. Exley. And once again, that would be it for the Writer's Lounge. And as you say on the Writer's Lounge, let the story begin, and we'll see you next time here in 2 weeks.
Everybody's talking about the hole in our town. It's the latest thing that's been going down. We got people standing around just kicking the ground, talking about the hole in our town. Every day it's deeper and a whole lot wider, and it won't be long until the whole city's inside her. You think you got it made and then you turn around. You gotta
stinking hole in your town.
Again, the storm clouds apart and the sun begins.